And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable. We are able to invite back Glenn Poole. Glenn is a well-known men's health advocate. He's the former UK coordinator of International Men's Day, and he is the founder of the organisation called Stop Male Suicide. Glenn is also the author of a number of books, including How You Can Stop Male Suicide in 7 Simple Steps, and he is currently the development officer at the Australian Men's Health Forum. Finally, Glenn has on several occasions been a guest presenter on Dads on the Air, so it is with great pleasure that we welcome Glenn to the program.
And he's got some news to bring us about and a number of topics which we're looking forward to discussing. Glenn, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You've been working for a long time, both internationally and in Australia, on reducing male suicide. And I wonder if you could just bring us up to date with some of the recent developments in that area.
Yeah, sure, Bill. I think the last time we spoke about the Stop Male Suicide project I've been working on was when we held the first National Male Suicide Prevention Conference at the end of 2017. So maybe it's a good opportunity to give you an update on what we were up to in 2018. So, as you know, suicide kills 8 people a day in Australia, and 6 of them are men, and 2 of them are women. So men are 3 times more likely to kill themselves than men. And one of the things that we've discovered is that one of the ways we can prevent male suicide is by training people in communities to know how to spot a man at risk and how to take action if they think a man's at risk. Now, there's a lot of great suicide prevention training out there already, but none of it really focuses on male suicide. So what we've done is we've set up a male suicide prevention training program, which takes people for a day, and it shows them how to spot a man at risk of suicide, how to have a conversation with him, and how to give him help and support. And that is proving incredibly popular. People walk into that training, they don't know how to spot a man at risk, they're not confident they could have a conversation with a man who is at risk, and they wouldn't know where to refer him. And by the end of the day, they tell us all of that has changed. And often after the training, they then get in touch and tell us about conversations they've started having with the men in their families or their communities or through work. And some of the primary health networks around the country have picked this up. So we've been doing quite a lot of training with one of the primary health networks down in Melbourne. And then one of our big events last year was that we went down to Tasmania and with Men's Resources Tasmania, who I think we had on the program before one time when I was here, and the local primary health network. We held a one-day workshop for about 80 people from that part of Tasmania, all focused on how we could prevent suicide in that particular community. And there's a lot of interest, particularly I found, in how we can prevent suicide amongst separated dads. So we've been working to help get the Dads in Distress support group down into Tasmania as part of that work, and we know that they've now currently got at least a couple of groups started up there, which they didn't have before, which is fantastic news. So a lot's been happening.
It's clearly not something that has to be left to the professionals. You're getting out to every man in the street and saying, look, these are things you might see in your mates, and this is something you can do.
Yeah, totally. One of the mostly unknown facts about male suicide is the majority of male suicides aren't linked to a mental health issue. So if we just leave it to the mental health professionals and the psychiatrists, we're not going to solve male suicide, because most men who suicide aren't in the mental health system. And people are a bit concerned, you know, don't I need to be professional, be professionally trained to do this? No, not at all. I mean, we're not talking about you being the person who ends up, you know, counselling and treating this person on an ongoing basis. We're actually giving people the confidence just to have conversations with people, find out what's going on, look out for the men in their lives, and then point them in the right direction. And it's looking out for stuff like, you know, guys are going through relationship difficulties, guys are struggling at work, guys whose behaviour may have changed recently, maybe they're drinking more, they're getting more angry, they're taking more risks, and behaving more erratically. So there's lots of little warning signs that are acute to us to ask the question whether someone's thinking of suicide. And as long as you know how to have that conversation and where to refer someone, then that's a very helpful thing for someone to do. And even if someone isn't at risk of suicide, if you've got concerns about them, by asking that question, by asking your mates how they're going, it sort of opens up a kind of conversation where you can provide support anyway, irrespective of whether suicide's there.
So do you limit it just to the are you okay type question, or can you actually confront it directly and say, you know, I hope you're not feeling suicidal?
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a concern, so one of the common ways that I frame the question, because you don't want it to just come out of the blue, right? You want people to understand why you're asking and for them to know that it's coming from a place of care and concern. So I might say something like, it's not unusual for blokes going through what you're going through to be thinking of suicide. Have you been thinking of suicide? And as long as they know that they can, I mean, know this from research, as long as they trust you, as long as they respect you, and as long as they feel that they can speak to you without being judged, Bill, and that's the most important piece of it. It's like, often we ask the question hoping that the answer is no. So when we say something like, you better not be thinking of doing something stupid, or, you know, I hope you're not thinking of killing yourself, are you? People will instantly go, well, no. They won't sort of feel able to answer honestly and openly. So that being able to ask the question without any judgment and being okay with the answer, that's a very powerful thing to do. And mates can be great to have that conversation with, because, you know, you generally trust and respect your mates. And that's two of the key things. You might not trust and respect your GP or a health professional or even someone on a helpline. So it's a really important thing for and a really simple thing actually for particularly men. I want to see more men get these skills, because one of the things is that this training tends to go to community workers, social workers, people working in the health professions, the caring professions, and as you'll understand, most of those are women. And there's a big national program doing sort of generic suicide prevention training around the country at the moment, and 70% of the people getting that training are women. And it's great that women get that training. But what we would like to see is more men getting hold of these skills and these tools. And it also builds your own sort of mental health awareness and mental health resilience if you have an understanding of how to spot the signs and what to do about it.
And one of the worst examples seems to be in the armed forces, where more of our troops kill themselves and actually die in combat, which must be a first in world history, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that is, thankfully, less of our armed services are dying in combat, obviously, but the fact that our vets are a high-risk group. There's a bit of a pilot project going on up in Townsville at the moment, which is targeted at veterans and their families. So we'll see how that goes, but it's terrible that happens, but it's good to know that the veterans are sort of are on the agenda as a group that we need to target. And obviously, as you'll understand, whilst there are men and women who've served, and both men and women who've served are at risk, the majority of vets are, of course, men.
Are there any other areas that have a particular susceptibility, do you think?
Yeah, well, there's the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander community. The rate's twice as high there, so Indigenous blokes are certainly at high risk, particularly out in some of those rural, remote communities up in WA, the Kimberleys, places like that. And blokes who are not at work. So there's been a lot of great work done in recent years in terms of using workplaces as a way of reaching men, and that is proven very effective in construction. But about half of blokes who suicide are not in the workplace. And so I think we need to think harder about how do we reach the men who aren't in the workplace. And also how do we reach blokes who are maybe there's a lot more men who are self-employed. So that whilst they're in work, they're not connected to those workplace programs. So, you know, particularly like tradies and people like that who are doing their own thing, working on their own on a day-to-day basis. We need to think a bit smarter about how we reach those guys.
Yes, look, there is a lot of work to do, but it's great that you're coming up with these new approaches, and we can only hope that it does start to bring that suicide rate down to zero would be, I think, the aim. But Glenn, we've reached a part of the program where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you've picked?
Well, yeah, I've decided to go for some summery, sunny songs today. So the first one is one of my favourites. Shows my age. It goes back to the 80s. It's Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves.
I just can't wait till the day when you knock on my door.
And that was Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves, which was chosen for us today by our guest Glenn Poole. Glenn has recently been organising the National Men's Health Gathering, and I wonder, we're very interested to hear how that went and some of the highlights from the gathering.
Yeah, oh, Bill, it's one of my favourite things. It's my third Men's Health Gathering. So the National Men's Health Gathering goes back to the 90s. This was the 12th one. It's usually every 2 years, but we've had a gap of 3 years. So whilst it's my third one, it's my first one as an Australian resident. And it was also my first one where I was actually involved in organising. So the last two gatherings I went to, I was very lucky to be invited to speak, which is always a great pleasure and a great privilege. But this time I was on the organising committee, so I was beginning to fall out of love with it, because I'm sure you've organised things in your life, and at some point you kind of think, why did I take this on?
Yeah.
And then I got to the event, and it was just fantastic. There were some people that I've been to men's health events all around the world, and there's something very special about the Australian Men's Health Gathering, because it's not doctors and medics and just academics. It's mostly blokes, first off, which most of the health sector isn't. So it's mostly blokes, and it's blokes from all over the country who are working down at a grassroots level with the men in their communities. These guys really know how to make a difference for men. They know how to talk to men in their own language. They know about the issues that men face. They really know what's going on for men. Some of those guys like working out in rural communities or working in remote Aboriginal communities, as well as guys working in the metropolitan areas too. And, you know, some of them are working in social work, some are doing health promotion, some are working with dads, some are working in the mental health space, and we also get some academics and clinical psychologists. But the thing that unites us all is that we're all passionate about making a difference for men and boys. And to have it was about 150 people this year, so to have 150 people together for 3 days focusing on the question of how do we improve the lives and the health of men and boys, it's a great space to be in. I left feeling so energized and looking forward to the next one
already. That's great.
Yes, if you told me that the day before, I would have said you're crazy, but by about day two I was already thinking about how can we make the next one bigger and better.
And it was had some large divisions. I think the first day was Indigenous issues.
Yeah, so one of the great things about the National Men's Health Gathering is it really does bring together people working with non-Indigenous men and people working with Indigenous men. It's not just a sort of a tokenistic, oh, here's a couple of sessions about our Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander brothers. Aboriginal men's health workers, they run that, and it runs alongside and overlaps with the Indigenous conference. And so we have a motto which is about learning from each other. And the great thing is, there's probably more dedicated men's health workers in the Aboriginal community than there is in the Aboriginal communities than there is in the non-Indigenous community. So we've got a load to learn from them. Obviously, they're dealing with many different issues, but we have so much to learn. So it's a real privilege to sit with our Indigenous brothers and hear about the issues they're dealing with, but hearing also a positive message about the actions they're taking and the difference they're making. And there was a really standout session for me, which was a guy called Rick Welsh, who works out at Mount Druitt, where they have a shed. It's not like a men's shed, it's more of a community centre really, and it's mostly for Aboriginal men, but they've opened it to the whole community, so men and women, Aboriginal, non-Aboriginal, but mostly Aboriginal men. And one of the things that they've been doing is working with the justice system, and they have gone knocking on the door of the court and said, look, the way that you're dealing with our community isn't working, we need to change something. And they had a whole session with a judge and a lawyer and Rick himself explaining how they've changed the way the justice system works in that area to try and keep kids in families. It's been incredibly successful, and it was really heartening for me that one of the other delegates from up in Queensland said, I tell my clients in Queensland to stay away from the justice system because the Queensland justice system is the worst in the world, and if you're an Indigenous fella and you get caught up in the system, you're never coming out. And he said, this talk is and you can understand why people would think that. And it's not just, you know, Indigenous communities. We know that sometimes you might say that to dads, you know, be careful of the system. You don't want to get caught up in it. We all know the problems of that if we've worked with separated fathers, as you and I have, Bill. But that's kind of a hopeless space to get to. And this guy said, I've changed my mind. I now want to go knocking on the door of the justice system in my area and learn from you. And the conference passed a resolution that we would support a roadshow to take that example from Sydney around the country and try and encourage other systems to around the different states to follow that example.
Well, that's great to recognise that we are learning from the Indigenous, in, which has taken us white invaders a long time to reach that stage. And what were the themes on the other days?
Broadly, obviously, it's all about health, but we focused not so much on the medical health, we're focusing on the social factors that shape health. So some of those are things like the role of fatherhood in improving health. A big one at the moment is how do we make services more male-friendly. The new national men's health strategy, it's got some flaws, but one of its strongest points is it says loud and clear right throughout this national strategy that it's not men that need to change, it's the health system that needs to become more male friendly. And I think that's where our sector, the men's health sector, is strongest. We've got years of experience of delivering male friendly services, and that was a big focus of the entire conference. And our challenge then is how do we take that learning and make sure that it gets picked up by the health sector more broadly.
So an example of that might be perhaps having medical centres open out of hours because men are working all day. Has that been an example?
Yeah, some things are actually really simple. They are actually just about making services more accessible by opening them at different hours or making them available through the workplace or sports clubs. It was really heartening to hear, actually, we had a representative from the Australian Medical Association. They're the trade body for GPs who see people for 5 minutes and you're in and out. And she was saying, yes, actually, we should start to think more innovatively. We should think about sports clubs. We should think about workplaces. And she said, we should even think about pubs.
Exactly. There's an awful lot we like to talk to you about, Glenn, but I wonder if in your executive role at the National Men's Health Forum, I understand that you've got a new policy that's just been promoted for the years 2020 to 2030. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so that's the government policy. Australia was the one of the first countries in the world to have a national men's health policy, and the previous one came out in 2010. Had a chunk of funding in the first couple of years for a couple of projects, and then kind of got lost with nothing really happening with it. But it got revived in the last couple of years. A bit of funding was put into the men's health sector, and part of that funding was focused on helping develop the next strategy. So the next strategy will run from 2020 to 2030. As I just mentioned earlier, there's a big focus on making the health sector more male friendly. The big question will be how much money will be provided to make that happen, and will there be an ongoing plan to make sure that even if the government changes, and I think we can predict that over the next 10 years there'll certainly be a change of prime minister, as there tends to be in Australia, but I also imagine there'll be a change of government, or one or two changes of governments in that 10 years. So that's our challenge, is how do we want to get cross-party support for men's health, so that actually yes, we've got a policy, that's great, but we need to make sure that whatever government's in power, that policy is ongoingly on the agenda, and there's money behind it, and there's accountability, and there's someone responsible in government for making sure the actions are delivered and the policy moves forward.
So is that policy on your website at the moment?
There's a link to it on our website at the moment, or you can find it through the government's Department of Health website, or you simply search Australian Men's Health Strategy or men's health policy, and you'll find it quite easily. Yeah, we are an apolitical organisation, and at any one time in Australia, even if one party's in power nationally, well, another party will be in power somewhere at a state level. And that's one of the next challenges, is we want to see a health policy at every state. And at the moment, there's only one in New South Wales and in WA. So there's a bit of work to be done there, getting the other states up to speed.
Yes, well, look, we wish you all the best in that, for getting that policy up. Glenn, you've picked another song for us. Could you tell us which one you've picked and why you picked it?
Yes, sticking with the sunshine theme today, Bill, this is from a Canadian band, oddly named Len, and the song, probably their only hit, is Don't Steal My Sunshine.
That was Don't Steal My Sunshine by Len, as chosen for us today by our special guest, Glenn Poole. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email, and we'll be in touch. And if you'd like to listen to this show again for our interview with Glenn Poole on a number of interesting topics there, you can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So it just remains for me now to thank our guest, Glenn Poole. Thank you very much for being on the program, Glenn.
Great to be here again, Bill. Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.